Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Sod 2 of For the Record Program Number 607, Shakes on a Plane and Other Scary Stories, interview with Daniel Hopsicker. This program is being recorded on August 19th of the year 2007. And it is my pleasure and privilege to welcome back to our airwaves Daniel Hopsicker, the author of, among other titles, Barry and the Boys, Welcome to Terrorland, numerous articles on the madcowprod.com website, and now also the author of a number of responses to a lawsuit by the man who isn't there. Daniel, welcome back to our airwaves.
Hey, Dave, good to be with you. So, I was about to tell you about when I became interested in the potential Lebanese involved in 9/11.
Okay.
4 months after the September 11th attack occurred, the only proven incident of terror in the United States since 9/11. And we all, of course, remember, you will when I remind you, that a 15-year-old kid flew a small plane into the side of a skyscraper in Tampa, Florida, left behind a letter praising Osama bin Laden. Remember that?
Yes, I do. It happened shortly after September 11th, and everybody said there was nothing to it.
Yeah, well, and I, of course, never believed that. My first suspicion, I mean, they said the kid had been made suicidal by his acne medication, which certainly would be a surprise to the millions of American teenagers taking acne medication. But even if he had been made suicidal by his acne medication, it certainly didn't explain why the acne medication had made him write a letter praising Osama bin Laden before killing himself. So I wondered, what's the story here? The kid's name was Charles Bishop. And the other thing, if you remember, this was the top of the news for an entire week. Of course, the entire nation was attuned to terrorist concerns so soon after 9/11, and it was the top story, and yet you never saw the kid's mom. You never saw anyone from the family. An attorney, their attorney requested the media respect the family's privacy, and the media did! And you had to go, what's up with that? So I began investigating and discovered that the kid's name isn't Charles Bishop, it's Charles Bishara, really. The mother, who we never saw, was married. The kid's father is a mobster from Boston. Half Sicilian, half Lebanese, mobster from Boston.
Interesting.
On the lam at the time the kid committed suicide for heroin trafficking.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So the kid's father was half Sicilian, half Lebanese, a mobster, and was on the lam trying to get away from a heroin trafficking charge.
Right.
Okay.
So I sit there and I stare at that, and I develop a little hypothesis, which was that the boy was attempting to impress his absent dad. Furthermore, that the boy had heard something, that the boy had heard his absent dad in some way praise Osama bin Laden, and in an attempt to impress him, had gone out and flown his light plane into a skyscraper. What evidence would there be for that? I didn't have any at the moment, and so I called a guy who doesn't like me. His name is Rich Clements. He was a special advisor to Ronald Reagan back in the 80s, and he had been called out of retirement after 9/11 because no one in the CIA knew anything about the Northern Alliance, and this guy had been running Northern Alliance guys back during our war against the Soviets in Afghanistan. And I had met with this guy and given him a copy of Barry and the Boys because he's more than likely in it, and he didn't like the book. But we spent a couple afternoons together and had developed at least, you know, something of a modus vivendi. So I called him and I asked him, I said, Rich, I'm just, you know, in regards to 9/11, I am only attempting to put uniforms on the players. Okay. I explained to him about my suspicions about the kid. And I said, is it at all possible that either the Sicilian mafia and or the Lebanese clans involved in drug trafficking could have a beef with our current president. And he allowed that that was indeed possible, which was probably like, you know, another moment when I realized that I had no idea what had happened at 9/11, and if I didn't, neither did anybody else, you know, outside of the know, that it was some sort of a power play on a level none of us are privy to. But the Lebanese angle, for me, has been there ever since. You know, I mean, you know, these are the movers and shakers in the Middle East. These are the people that move the money around. And I've often wondered, you know, what the true story there was. And then something happened just a couple months ago that increased my suspicion of that particular incident, which I plan to investigate further, or as fully as I can, okay? The attorney for the family, for the mother of the dead kid, who was successful in keeping the media from interviewing her for the entire week that this was the number one story in the nation, her name was Pam Campbell. I knew nothing about her at the time, and I don't know how I found this out, but one thing led to another. Turns out Pam Campbell was also the attorney for the Schiavo family. Terry Schiavo, mm-hmm. The girl the brain dead girl in a coma that the Republican Party made an issue of mm-hmm. a year or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
And she had been rewarded for her Starwalled efforts on the Schiavo's behalf by Governor Jeb Bush, who made her a judge a year ago.
This is the mother of the kid, or is this the attorney for the kid?
The attorney.
Oh, the attorney for the kid's family.
So the question that I have at the moment is, how did this kid's family, okay? I mean, okay, the kid kills himself at 9 a.m., okay? By 2 p.m., the family has an attorney who's a Republican operative.
Mm-hmm.
How did that happen? Why did that happen?
Well, there was an old George Gershwin song, Nice Work If You Can Get It. I think it was a Gershwin tune. Nice Work If You Can Get It, and You Can Get It If You Try. And some of these people whom you've been investigating certainly seem to be able to get those good jobs.
Well, they were obviously trying to... there was obviously something there that they wanted concealed, and they kept it concealed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you I know at the moment what that is, but I certainly have my suspicions. You know, I mean, the missing dad is a heroin trafficking Sicilian Lebanese guy.
Mm-hmm. You know, definitely, Daniel. Very, very briefly, let me just jump in and try to, because if there are new people who are listening to this, they're not necessarily going to understand some of the portentous silences, I think, because for years you've been investigating a bunch of connections, and when again this your presence in Florida derives from the previous presence there of some of the September 11th hijackers, when you began investigating what they were doing, with whom they were associating, for whom they were working, you came across an intelligence and organized crime milieu involved with major drug smuggling, organized crime activities of a number of different types, evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of the Gus Bulis murder, the Jack Abramoff scandals, and a whole bunch of other things. And this is the milieu that the hijackers existed in, and it's a milieu which simply has not been touched. And
and along those lines, for any new listeners, probably the most important fact that I uncovered down here was that during the same month that Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, his bodyguard, arrived to attend a Venice, Florida flight school, the owner of the flight school's Learjet was surrounded by DEA agents on a runway at Orlando Executive Airport, and they found 43 pounds of heroin on board, which is the kind of case any prosecutor worth his salt makes every day across this country. Mohammed Atta arrives. The owner's Learjet's got 43 pounds of heroin. Where does heroin come from? There's a deal here, folks. There's a deal here. And no one apparently is courageous enough. We don't have a Jim Garrison anymore. And there it sits. there it sits.
Yep. And by the way, too, Daniel, as I've noted, the activities that you're investigating in South Florida in connection with September 11th also have historical tributaries going all the way back to the Kennedy assassination, and your work with David Ferry and Barry Seal and some of the things we spoke about there earlier.
So
has there been any progress in the lawsuit from Mr. X, again, the convenience store owner, who is also an operative on behalf of Titan Corporation, who also happened to own a casino boat, and casino boats were being frequented by some of the September 11th hijackers in the run-up to that event, too. So,
that was the initial shocker, because I assume, okay, we got a Lebanese store owner flees after 9/11. He was cashing checks for the terrorists. They hung out at his place. So he's like an Arab operative sent ahead to pave the way, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But no, you know, he a couple of years earlier, he was a partner in a gambling boat. Now there are in Florida, your listeners should be aware, 26 completely unregulated casinos around the state. 26 casinos with no regulation at all. They're all called casino boats, and they go 3 miles offshore, and virtually no one knows how these enterprises became legitimate. And it was like, you know, the strangest possible way in a midnight rider to a bill a dozen years ago. And you can imagine the kind of slush fund that is kicked off by 26 casino boats. There is no one looking to see, it's all skim, okay? It used to be the FBI would at least make an attempt to verify that the mob wasn't skimming casinos in Vegas, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But no one's looking at where this money goes. It's all skim. In fact, if you get on a boat and you feel like you've gotten into a rigged dice game where the dice are being manipulated, you've got no one to complain to. It's completely unregulated. I mean, it's beyond the Wild West, and it benefits the powers that be. It benefits people that are able to keep the game going. That's mm-hmm. that's what's going on. So there we are.
Yep, and again, we should remember that the individual who's suing you, in all respect, you're not wanting to mention his name, but this guy was the owner of a casino boat, but the owner of a convenience store, at which many of the hijackers frequented and through which they would obtain money orders. And was this the same casino, or the same convenience store owner, Daniel, who was carrying that very, very heavy trunk that cab driver witnessed?
Well, the trunk came from now this is the mistake I made, but it was an honest mistake. I identified there was an apartment across the street,
mm-hmm.
That not the owner but the operator of the convenience store lived in, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it was the convenience store owner's brother-in-law apartment across the street being used by the terrorists and by Zacharias Moussaoui, who carried a chest full of gold, according to my sources, down to it and back to Saudi Arabia just before the September 11th attack.
And again, this convenience store owner also is a major functionary for Titan Corporation in Saudi Arabia, of all places, and he also owns a casino boat. And that's not your average convenience store owner.
Wouldn't appear to be.
Nope. And he also owns 40 gas stations in Florida?
Yeah.
That's very convenient indeed, as I said. And so this person is currently... I'm not a lawyer, Daniel, but it doesn't sound to me like the guy has much of a case. Of course, the idea isn't to have a case. The idea is just to bleed you.
Yeah, that's all really anyone needs to do, isn't it? You don't have to be a genius. I mean,
By the way, Daniel, in connection with September 11th, you're not the only person to have nuisance litigation thrown at them. In fact, a lot of the petro wealth, a lot of the wealthy Saudis and related elements, even wealthier now with the rise in oil prices, are using that tremendous economic leverage to sue people who've been investigating September 11th. In particular, they're suing journalists and authors in British courts. Of course, their standards are different. So you've got a lot of company, if it's
well,
any comfort.
No.
No, there is this, you know, the use of litigation to quiet the investigation is something that's drawing a lot, no, not a lot of attention, a fair amount of attention. People are noting that a lot of these wealthy Saudis, they have so much money, they can afford to just keep people, the average journalist or editor just doesn't have access to those many, many millions of dollars or billions. So they're using that recycled oil wealth to cover up, to file lawsuits to intimidate or silence critics like yourself.
Well, I can give you a couple more little pieces of information here.
Please do.
One is, one of the Saudi flights that took off after 9/11 was on a plane owned by a Christian evangelical network called, well, PAX, P-A-X. It's not PAX anymore, but it was PAX at the time. And the thing I find interesting is that the plane had a Christian symbol on the tail, and the Christian dove of peace.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't believe that nobody in the major media, you know, saw fit to tell us about that or to use it to tweak the Saudi royals fleeing the U.S. from Las Vegas after 9/11 in a plane with a Christian dove of peace on the back of it. You know, that would have been a kind of interesting piece of information, I would have thought. The second thing I can tell you is that in the Bin Laden family flight in the one out of Vegas that was most controversial, that carried a number of members of the Bin Laden family, 13 I believe, out of the U.S., there were three Americans. Actually, there were four Americans on board. Only three of whom were identified by why they were there. Three of them were security guards from a company in New Jersey, okay? And the fourth, a man by the name of J.P. Bonono, isn't mentioned at all.
How's that last name spelled?
B-U-O-N-O-N-O.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I defy anyone out there to find me an individual born in 1955, because they gave his date of birth on the manifest that was released, named J.P. Bonono. I do not believe there is one.
So you think that's an alias?
Well, now, we have been down this road before, I believe. The FBI, when it doesn't want something to get flagged by a computer, often misspells a name. For example, back in the investigations after the Kennedy assassination, there was a guy by the name of Mike McClaney, Havana casino factotum from Meyer Lansky, who was running a Cuban exile training camp on the shores of Lake Pontchartrain, where David Ferry and Lee Harvey Oswald were seen. And in the FBI memorandum about it, it said we could find nothing about McClaney, and they spelled his name McLaney instead of McLaney. And that's a cute trick they've often used. Now, if you look at that name, Bonono, B-U-O-N-O-N-O, with just a couple of little changes, that guy could be maybe J.P. Bonono.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I had not heard the name. That's why I asked you to spell it. That was one of the things that occurred to me. Is this a guy, any relation to the famous Bonono crime family?
Well, the Bonono crime family, if this guy were from the Bonono crime family, it would not be totally out of place, would it? Because the Bononos were known as the heroin family, going back to the 70s and 80s. I mean, I've watched documentaries in which mob guys said, you know, that when the rest of the mob was under an edict to stay away from drugs, the Bononos were dealing heroin like there was no tomorrow. So if there was a member of a of a one of New York's organized crime families, involved in the heroin traffic on that plane full of Saudis leaving the U.S. Wouldn't be totally out of place because the Saudis are involved in heroin.
Yep, the example of how these strange bedfellows come together and ultimately crystallize. Alvin Malnick, A.K.A. Alvin of Arabia, that's the one that just absolutely sets the standard by which the rest of these incredible activities should be measured. What status is this unmentionable individual's lawsuit against you? Is it still in discovery or?
We're going to trial in December.
All righty.
God willing, and the creeks don't rise, we're going to trial in December. So there you go. And I tried this JP Buonanno. I mean, I've tried calling. I've tried the three security guards all came from an outfit called CDT in Elmwood, New Jersey. And when I spoke with the owner of CDT, who's been on all kinds of talk shows, he lied to me and told me that they'd never been in Elmwood, New Jersey, which I was easily able to find out was a lie. So, I mean, you know, when people lie, it's usually for a reason. That's kind of where that stands. You know, that's kind of where, although the town where this outfit makes their home in New Jersey is the home of the Sopranos Bada Bing. The Bada Bing is there. And this individual whose name he'll sue me if I say his name, even though this is true, so I won't say his name. He was involved about 4 years ago in a really interesting case in this town in New Jersey where the Bada Bing from the Sopranos is housed. In which a massage parlor called Ultima Spa doubled as a front for prostitution and a club and a front for prostitution, et cetera, et cetera. And when the FBI eventually raided the club and took 135 patrons into custody, 35 of them were local and county police officials.
Not the first time that sort of thing has happened.
Does it get any better than that, you know? Couple weeks later, one of the cops that got caught was a police. It's Lodi is where this is, and he got was caught and accused of assaulting and threatening to kill the prosecutor that brought the case. Okay. Well, apparently that's been resolved because he's now the chief of police in town.
Oh, well, just goes to show you. Again, nice work if you can get it, and he got it, didn't he?
Yeah. So there you go. There's another Abramoff angle, two of them, to the Saudi planes. One of the air charter companies, Ryan International, which was involved in that bin Laden flight I was just telling you about. The owner, Ron Ryan, is mixed up in the Marianas, flying shrimp from the Marianas to the States.
Now, the Marianas, is it that Kiribati? It was the Kiribati Republic. That the Marianas are part of that, and that was where Wolfgang Barringer was hanging out.
No, the Marianas are the... It's the U.S. dependency where Abramoff had suborned the local that's where Tom DeLay went.
Maybe it's a different island. What is one of the island chains that was a major focal point of a lot of the combat in World War II? I know the Marianas were one of them. Maybe
the
it's the Gilberts.
That's the Marianas and Saipan and Tintin. Another of the islands was where the flights with the nuclear bombs left to bomb Japan back during World War II.
They were, but now Barringer had set up in some one of those old island chains
that's in the Kiribatis. You got to become back when Barringer was a happening story. I scoured the library for books about the South Seas. Okay,
uh-huh.
apparently they're bigger than I thought, you know, and they change the names of the islands occasionally, which makes it even more difficult, you know.
Yeah.
Cook Island becomes this, becomes that, you know, but the Kiribatis are a little bit east of there. Another Abram Hoff connection was is this. Did you know? Okay, here's the thing. I mean, you're a reporter for a major, an investigative reporter, right? So this list of air charter companies comes out that flew 11 flights to Saudis, and you can see that three of them are CIA contractors, and a couple are mobbed up, and then you see that one of the planes used was a 727 owned by the president of Gabon, the West African nation of Gabon. Now, if you have the slightest bit of curiosity, you got to ask yourself, what's going on there?
Mm-hmm.
What's up with that? Okay? Gabon, the president of Gabon, paid Jack Abramoff $9 million for a White House meeting that took place in 2004, although both Abramoff and Bush deny that the $9 million had anything to do with it. And the other curious factor is that the president of Gabon had a CIA babysitter. I guess that's what they call them, isn't it? And in 2001, when the flight took place, 2001, and this gal who was a babysitter used to be a independent film distribution person back in 94, 95 when Abram Hoff was making his epics. And graduated from Pepperdine Law School, which is today, I guess, run by Kenneth Starr.
Yep. Yeah. He I know he holds fourth there. I don't know what his position is, but it's a powerful one.
So you know, she's clearly, you know, not unrecognizable, you know, in a sea of Republican operatives.
Uh-huh. And by the way, Daniel, we are almost out of time. One of the stories that we're not going to have time to talk about, but I want to call to the attention of people who are going to visit your website, is a story you did about Mohammed Atta being an officer for a company in Florida that has all kinds of interesting connections. People who were attached to the Moroccan embassy, a Turkish naval attaché, and all kinds of people were hooked up with this business for which Mohammed Atta was apparently an officer. And the only place you're going to read about that is www.madcowprod.com.
How strange is that? Okay, I mean, Mohammed Atta was listed until recently as an officer of a company out of Orlando, of all places, a dummy shell company. And that company would have been used to launder money. I mean, you know, it's not like the company would have had a shingle out anywhere. The address of the company was an IHOP in Orlando. And the guy that was running the company is the head of the Moroccan American Chamber of Commerce. And if you read, you know, Mad Cow Prod, and I guess it's a couple other places. I mean, there was the military attaché at the Moroccan embassy owned a couple businesses in Florida with people who were on the FBI's terrorist list. His name was Colonel Ahmad. I got a letter from this guy. He offered to sue me too. Colonel Ahmed Arara was the military attaché, still is, of the embassy of the Kingdom of Morocco. And with this guy on the terrorist watch list named Mohammed Arara, he incorporated a company called Titim Holdings, T-I-T-I-M.
Mm-hmm.
Titim, I looked everywhere for it, is a verb in Gaelic, and it means to fall down. So before 9/11, the Moroccan military attaché and two of his Arab companions launched Falling Down, Inc.
There you go. Well,
this obviously has nothing to do with the 9/11 attack, you know?
Well,
but there you go.
Well, Daniel, we are all out of time here. Fortunately, however, we have given those listeners who have not recently visited your website at least an overview, a cursory overview, but an overview of some of the stories you've been talking about. And if listeners are a little bit confused, hopefully they're also have had their interest piqued. Go to www.madcowprod.com, read about Sheikhs on a Plane, read about Mohammed Atta's business in Florida with all these other people, and you'll see why it is that there are people like this unnamed convenience store owner who also happens to own a casino boat and 40 gas stations who are suing Daniel Hopsinger, because you're about the only person on the ground down there in South Florida slowly slowly overturning the rocks and looking at this mess?
Either very smart or very stupid, and you know, it could be both.
Well,
good to talk to you, David. It's always a pleasure.
All right, www.madcowprod.com. That's where the articles are. That's where you can order Daniel's books. We've been visiting with Daniel Hopsicker, the author of, among other titles, Barry and the Boys, and Welcome to Terrorland, and numerous articles on the www.madcowprod.com website. Visit that website. Visit www.spitfirelist.com with a vast array of printed information and audio information on linked websites, and you won't be able to sleep at night, I'm sure. For Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening to Side 2 of For the Record program number 607, Shakes on a Plane and Other Scary Stories interview with Daniel Hopsicker. This is being recorded on August 19th of 2007. For Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.
Okay.
All righty, Daniel.
I guess he dropped.
He dropped?
Okay.
Daniel, you there? Nope. There we go.
All right.
Well, I went into that.